is on the argument docket. The first is 2009 CA 565 NRA, the estate of Cloverdance. Council both here and ready to proceed, I assume?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And the second case is 2009 Colorado Appeals 893 Kearns Construction versus Landmark Engineering. I hope I said that correctly. Are both council ready for that case?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Let me make a very brief record before we start the arguments. Both of these cases are set for 15 minutes per side. There is a digital clock system that keeps track of the time. There's a module for it on the lectern that will be, the light on top will be green for the first 10 minutes, yellow for the next 5 minutes, and red when the argument is over. In addition to the lighting system, as I indicate, you have a reverse countdown digital clock that will keep you posted on how much time is remaining in the argument. But if the appellant wants any assistance in reserving time for rebuttal, please let me know and we will, or I will, try to give you a high sign when you've reached that time, and then you can go beyond at your risk. We want you to know that we have read the briefs, we've read some of the authority cited in the briefs, and one of us has been into the record. So we perceive that we understand the facts of the case, we generally understand the law of the case, or the law that applies to the case, and we would recommend you go directly to the legal issues rather than devote a great deal of time on the facts. But the time is yours to do as you wish, and if you want to use your time that way, it's up to you. There is a microphone on the lectern. The purpose of that microphone is to magnify or to amplify the argument for those in the room and also to record the argument. The arguments are digitally recorded and are posted on the internet within a few working days of the argument. So we want you to stay next to the lectern or near the lectern so that the microphone can clearly pick up your argument. We sometimes use the recordings in the preparation of the opinion, and obviously we'd like a clear copy of the argument on the internet. The lectern is adjustable by two toggle switches, which will be on your right. If you find it uncomfortably high or low, please feel free to adjust it to a comfortable height. And finally, if anyone in the room has a cell phone, a BlackBerry, an iPhone, or any other sort of electronic device that might go off unexpectedly, we would ask you to turn it off or at a minimum put it on silent so as not to disturb, so you're being summoned by it will not disturb either the court or counsel in the conversation that we'll be having during the argument. I really sort of prefer to call arguments conversations rather than arguments, but I think you will, those of you who are here will recognize that what's going about to transpire is a very serious argument between the panel and counsel. Very serious conversation. Did I say argument? Very serious conversation between the two. No one has any questions or reason not to commence argument, we're ready, Mr. Hill.
Will you, court, please tell me when I have 5 minutes left of my 15?
I will do so.
May it please the court. Opposing counsel. I'm here on behalf of Louise Cloverdance, 91 years old, lives in Sterling, has raised her 47-year-old developmentally disabled son in that area, 48-year-old son in that area, and has 7 children in the Sterling area, 5 that are scattered elsewhere, 3 Missouri, 1 Michigan, 1 Castle Rock. Gregory Cloverdance is the 48-year-old developmentally disabled man. Perhaps when one goes through this record, it is very difficult to put a finger on why there has to be such a horrific, divisive, unpleasant family situation. The issue that was brought here before you is to ask for the removal of Colleen Carmichael, a daughter, and a son-in-law, Frank Carmichael, as guardians of Gregory Cloverdance. They were appointed by agreement in about 1994, 1995. When that was done, there was a visitor's report, and in fact, it was followed this way, even though it wasn't in the order, that Mrs. Cloverdance would make the day-to-day decisions for Gregory. What seems to have evolved now is a desire on the guardians to move Gregory to Missouri. We have a statute passed in 2008 that specifically recognizes that, depending on what Missouri has. What also has happened, which is apparent in the record, particularly in the written report of Dr. Spiegel, is the horrible, horrible infighting power, the display of power by the guardians.
Mr. Hill, didn't the trial court, I appreciate your client wanted the guardians removed, but in its order, didn't the trial court insert a number of protections for the interests of your client so that the son will be here in Colorado for a substantial period of the year and she will continue to have some considerable role in his affairs?
That's true. And I believe it's about half and half. And my answer is that having observed most of this conflict for over a year and a half, those efforts which the guardian ad litem suggested as a prelude to removal are not working. In my judgment, they will not work.
Well, isn't that the grist for another hearing in the trial court? Not here, but in the trial court? If they worked, and that's a judgment call, if they worked, would they have not protected your client with respect to most of her desires?
I believe not under the circumstances, Your Honor, with the conduct that has occurred and the way the interfamily relationship have played out between the two guardians and, if I may, that faction of five and those that live in Sterling. Yes, you certainly in these matters could have something back in the trial court, but what happened in this case is the matter was dismissed under a 41B motion on the basis that there was not sufficient evidence under the law for the plaintiff to go forward. And that was the dismissal, and that was error. The trial judge mentioned, and I have about six cases, a couple that are mentioned, several that I need to ask to supplement the record. I believe that for good cause, there is a basis and a standard that allows the removal of the guardians when there is this family dissension, the bitterness, the inability of a family to get along. And the trial judge mentioned that as a factor when I believe that it is a standard, it is cause. When you have that, the best interest of the ward calls for a change.
Is the judge compelled to make a change just because there is strife within the family about how to take care of the ward?
No, the judge would not be compelled to make the change. But in the cases where we have looked in Supreme Court of North Dakota, New York, Arizona, Wisconsin, Arkansas, I think there's about six of them. They have made the changes. There has not been any discussion that there needed to be statistics or studies to show that the change would be beneficial. It was treated as self-evident, as axiomatic, and the trial judge made the change. The report of Dr.
Just based on conflict alone, no consideration as to whether the present guardians are otherwise doing a good job.
Your Honor, there could easily be a blurb that touched on. So in my opinion, the focus was on conflict alone. Yes, bitterness, divisiveness, that was the spotlight of the case.
Mr. Is that an instance where the guardians are appealing, former guardians are appealing, or where the family's appealing?
Pardon?
Are those cases in which the former guardians are appealing or the families appealing?
There was a mixture, Your Honor. The cases come up with an effort to remove a guardian, to resist a guardian's removal, and looking at whether a guardian should be appointed. This conflict comes up, and there's about couple of paragraphs in each case that address that.
Mr. Hill, are you suggesting that good cause was the standard that the trial court was applying, or was it applying the best interest of the ward? I thought that the judge said that the good cause claims had been dropped before this hearing, and that he was only looking at the best interests.
Well, the statute dealing with removal of a guardian in the incapacitated area of the statute just talks about the guardian may be removed on order of the court. Under the new statute that was passed in 2008, it talks about a guardian may be removed for cause in the best interest of the ward. I believe that's the language. And then that statute goes on, and though it enumerates six factors where you can remove a guardian, it does not make those the sole factor. It says guardian can be removed for cause as it affects.
I understand what the statute says. What was your client alleging in front of the trial court, that there should be removal for cause, or removal would serve the best interest of the ward?
In the trial court, the counsel emphasized that it was in the best interest of the ward to make a change.
And that's a discretionary decision that the trial court has to make. That's what you say is our standard of review, correct?
I do not agree it's the standard of review. I think that the standard of review here is de novo, and that the law clearly allows you to the trial judge to, and I believe where the trial judge said it was not addressed in the appellate courts of Colorado, I believe the standard is not discretionary. It is a standard where you look at the abuse that has occurred. And
you're not alleging abuse of the ward, are you?
The abuse, no, sir. The abuse is the conflict within the family, which has, if you will look even at parts of Dr. Spiegel's report or testimony, and if I may, I tried to pick an illustration of just a summary of the damning effect on the ward of what is going on in this family. The most glaring consideration, number one, is the destruction that is being caused in the family, and particularly to Gregory, because he's in the focus of the dissension, conflict, escalation, turmoil. I must have used 10 adjectives in my report to reflect how destructive and unhealthy it is. This was the primary focus. The second one was that in circumstances like this, it is not appropriate for one family member or a couple of family members to be designated as ones with the power to make the decision. This cultivates and fuels the decision.
Mr. Hill, I don't want to interrupt you, but you're down to about 4.5 minutes, and you started quoting at 5 minutes, so do you want to say the rest for a vote?
I believe that with what was shown by the testimony of Dr. Spiegel, which was not controverted as to the dissension, the power struggle, the adverse effect on Gregory, that the 41B dismissal was inappropriate and that the matter should be set back for a new trial.
May I ask a question on Mr. Hill's time, though?
Can we turn off the clock?
Certainly, Your Honor.
No, I'm not asking you. I'm asking vis-a-vis you, I know I can do it.
Mr. Hill, my impression of the case is that for 13 years, this guardianship seemed to have worked fairly well. And then, according to Dr. Spiegel, there came about a destructive intention and conflict. Who brought about this destructiveness and tension and conflict? Who was responsible for, you know, the disagreements becoming so intense? Does the record reflect that? Who's responsible for it?
I do not know that you could say that I could answer that yes, the record reflects it. You're correct that during that period of time, things were quiet. Then what happened? And in my opinion, Joe Cloverdance did two things. Can't remember in which order. Wanted to get a copy of the prior proceedings and wanted to know or suggested that it would be in the best interest of Gregory if he moved to Missouri. Thereafter followed Mrs. Cloverdance's effort to protect her relationship with her son. In my opinion, the guardians and Joe Cloverdance, that triggered what followed.
Thank you.
And that letter is in the record of the early stages of the proceeding.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Rick Ruffner, appearing on behalf of the guardians appellees in this matter. As the previous question just indicated, for 13 years, this guardianship proceeded without conflict, without court intervention, and so on. For reasons that are still not understood, in early 2008, that changed. It started with a petition for a restraining order that was filed by the ward's mother, followed 6 weeks thereafter by a petition to remove the guardians. In that petition, the case proceeded for 9 months on that petition that said the guardian should be removed for cause. It was only on the morning of hearing that the petitioner changed her position that we should solely proceed under the statutory criteria in 1514.503 that the ward's best interest required the change to occur. That happened because for the first time in that 9 month process, 5 weeks prior to that, Dr. Richard Spiegel had stated in a written report that he thought the conflict was such that it may be better to have a change in guardians. That was it. And that remained the only evidence that was presented to the trial when the trial was had on the petition. Interestingly, not one family member came forward to talk about family conflict. The petitioner did not come forward to testify about family conflict. There was no one to testify about facts of the family conflict. All that we had before the court was Dr. Spiegel's opinion, based upon a limited investigation, that the conflict might cause a change in guardianship.
Isn't that evidence of a conflict?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Isn't that evidence of a conflict?
That is evidence of a conflict.
So how can the case be dismissed at halftime?
Because that evidence alone, given all of the other information that also came out of Dr. Spiegel's testimony, including the benefits that the ward enjoyed in the state of Missouri, the health insurance, the schooling, and so on, all of those things, when balanced against that one statement in Dr. Spiegel's testimony and his report, was not sufficient for the court to exercise its supervisory powers in changing the guardianship per se.
Well, you need some evidence to get past halftime, don't you?
We could have rested at that point. And at that point, then, there is insufficient evidence, as the court found.
You did rest at that point, did you not?
No, I didn't rest. The petitioner rested at that point. And we could have then proceeded and rested as the case stood at that point. And as Judge Singer has indicated, what they had presented did not even make a prima facie showing, let alone a preponderance of the evidence to establish a change of guardianship.
Is that what Judge Singer found, that basically they were entitled to a directed verdict? I thought that Judge Singer had basically made a ruling that the evidence, though perhaps sufficient for a prima facie case, was not sufficient in weight to persuade him that ultimately the petitioner's case would be successful.
Actually, in paragraph 11 of his order, he concludes it by saying, it follows that in Dr. Spiegel's opinion does not establish even a prima facie case, let alone proof by a preponderance of the evidence, even considered in combination with the other testimony at trial.
So are we looking at this point to see whether or not the judge's ruling on essentially a directed verdict was proper, or are we looking to see whether or not the judge's evaluation of the probative weight of the evidence was correct?
I believe it's the latter, Your Honor.
But you just said he said both things.
He said there was not sufficient proof by a preponderance of the evidence to warrant a change in the guardianship.
But he based that opinion on his finding also there wasn't a prima facie case.
That's true.
And if he was wrong there, should we remand it for him to take another look at this?
First, you'd have to find that his ruling was wrong, that there was not a prima facie showing. And you have to take all of the evidence in balance. And the only statement there is Dr. Spiegel's statement of the conflict.
I thought a prima facie showing was taking the evidence in the light most favorable to the petitioner's position and seeing whether or not there were elements that it believed would support a ruling in the petitioner's favor. It's not a taking all the evidence in balance. I thought that was more of a question of whether the judge, in evaluating the totality of the evidence, believes that petitioner's evidence was persuasive enough.
Here you have the trier of fact hearing all of that evidence. And you can't take the one statement out of context. It has to be balanced against all of the evidence that the court heard about the best interests of the ward. And what the court is saying, there's not a prima facie showing to indicate that it's not in the ward's best interest to keep these guardians in light of all of those facts. That's the lack of a prima facie showing at the trial court. They simply did not, on balance, show enough evidence to indicate that it was in the ward's best interest to change the guardianship. Indeed, his ruling indicates just the opposite. The fact that he heard indicates it's in the ward's best interest to keep the guardian. But in essence, it's the prima facie showing was not made because of the totality of all of the facts that he did hear, the totality of Dr. Spiegel's testimony.
So is the determination of a prima facie showing a question of law that we reviewed de novo?
No.
What is the standard of review?
I believe it's a clearly erroneous standard, Your Honor, as I argued in our brief. Was the judge clearly erroneous in analyzing the facts to determine whether a prima facie showing had been made or not?
Or was he just premature? If you had rested, okay,
right.
He could have, I think, balanced all the evidence he had before him at that point. But you hadn't rested.
That's correct, because we had not gone forward with the hearing at that point.
We're at halftime. They've rested. The judge ruled. He balanced the evidence. Isn't that premature?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. Again, if the issue at that point is whether there's a prima facie showing, and the court, in considering all the evidence, determined there had not been a prima facie showing. If the court disagrees that there has been a prima facie showing, it could be remanded. We could then rest, and the court could go forward with its ruling. I mean, that would be the pragmatic effect of what would happen. There's no other evidence before the court other than what the court has already heard. And I think the court is anticipating that by its statement about the preponderance of the evidence and going even beyond the prima facie.
Doesn't Civil Rule Procedure 41 permit a court not only to determine whether a directed verdict is appropriate, but also to determine that, yes, I think, in my view, a prima facie case has been made, but not one that, without any evidence from the other side, would be persuasive ultimately on me when I weigh the evidence, when I not just determine whether there's sufficient evidence to make a case, but now I have to be the one to determine the probative value of that evidence. Doesn't Rule 41 allow for the trial court to make that determination at halftime as well?
I believe it does, and I think that's what Judge Singer did. One thing I need clarified from the court. There was an order to show cause in this case 5 weeks ago regarding the issue on attorney's fees. There was never any response on that order to show cause. I don't know if the attorney's fees issue is still part of the appeal or not.
Well, that was what the show cause order was about. It's my understanding, and I'm refreshing my memory as I sit here, that the amount of attorney's fees has not been determined.
That's correct.
And that makes the absent some exception to the rule, that makes the attorney's fees issue not before us.
That's what my understanding was, and I just wanted to make sure, so I won't spend any time on that issue.
Fine.
The courts, in their supervisory powers with regard to guardianships, have a very serious job. Guardianships are not taken lightly. They can't be taken lightly. Judge Singer certainly did not take this lightly. Termination of guardianship should not occur on a whim, should not occur on just because there's a dispute within a family, or not just because some people might disagree with decisions guardians have made and might have made different decisions. This court looked at the best interests of the ward and determined that the best interests required maintaining the guardianship that had worked well for 13 years. There was no reason to change it. The court did, as part of its supervisory powers, put certain requirements on the guardians with regard to the ward's staying with his mother, being in Sterling, Colorado, and so on. That's an appropriate role for the court. But nothing presented on December 4th, 2008, lifted this case to the level of requiring removal of the guardians, and that's the only issue actually before the court on that day.
According to Judge Singer, Dr. Spiegel testified that removal of the guardians and the replacement by a guardian outside the family would reduce the family conflict. Had the judge accepted that opinion, he would have been bound, perhaps, to remove the guardian, but he rejected on the grounds that there was no data to support this pivotal opinion. What standard do we review that determination by Judge Singer?
First of all, I don't think there's any requirement that he would have removed the guardians, even if he agreed with that statement of Dr. Spiegel. Family conflict would be one factor to consider in whether it's in the best interest of the ward to have a guardian changed, but I don't think he would have been bound. But Judge Singer goes on and indicates, based upon the evidence and the record he had before him at the time, that he did not find that any change in the guardian would change that family conflict, and therefore it wouldn't make any difference. And that goes in balance with all of the other benefits that the ward receives by having these guardians appointed in the first place, and which he continued to enjoy.
Well, let me go back to a point that Judge Richman raised about the Dr. Spiegel's opinion as far as being rejected by the court in part because, or maybe in whole, because there was no data to support it. Is data needed for that, or is that something which is intuitively obvious to people of common intelligence on the street, that, gee, sometimes when you've got a big family dispute, a neutral third party might be better off to resolve it?
I don't think data in the sense of scientific data is necessary for Dr. Spiegel to support his opinion. He's well experienced in the state, well known in the state, has a good reputation in the state. So I don't think that standing alone should be reasons to discount Dr. Spiegel's testimony. Again, as I've already argued, it's Dr. Spiegel's statement on the family conflict in light of all of the other testimony that Dr. Spiegel gave, mostly under cross-examination at the hearing, to show why the guardians were good for the ward and why that should not be changed. It's a very serious decision to change the guardian. When you're getting an unknown third person, balancing that against someone who has performed well for 13 years as a guardian, as Dr. Spiegel himself recognized, it's a very, very serious thing to change that blanket of comfort in knowing that we've had good guardians that have performed appropriately on behalf of the ward.
Well, Judge Singer goes on to say there's no indication that a change in the guardianship would, quote, reduce the conflict in the family. Is that a fact-finding that we review by the clearly erroneous standard, or is that a matter that we can review de novo?
I think it's clearly erroneous. Again, his findings are not a question of law here. They're a question of analysis of the facts and application of the law, that being the statute, 1514.503. So the clearly erroneous standard is what should apply.
So even though he said something about there being no data, what he really found was he rejected the opinion that the expert put forth, apparently.
Rejected in its totality as to whether the one opinion standing alone should control his decision in the case. If there are no further questions, I concluded my argument.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Hill, you have 4 minutes.
At the end of my remarks, if I may, and I apologize for the lateness, I will give counsel a supplement, which I emailed yesterday, and I have several cases, just the cases which I tender, that deal with conflict. They are not brief, they're just cited.
Okay. I would indicate at this point that I'm not quite sure how to handle it. I think counsel for the guardian should have an opportunity to write a letter to this court, maybe both of you write a letter to the court, addressed to the division within a few days of today, indicating whether those cases have any import at all on the result of the case.
I understand, and I looked at the rule that talked about supplement, and again, apologize for the lateness, but we worked on it till the last. And I certainly counsel should.
Well, subject to the 10-day, counsel give us a letter written to the members of the division, not to the court. If you write it to the court, it gets into the labyrinth up front. If you write it to us individually and send it to us, we'll get it directly, and we won't decide the case until we've had an opportunity to look at the supplemental authority and the letters that we will get 10 days from today.
And I'm charged with this time, I take it. If the court, please, again, the comment was made that Mr. Spiegel or Dr. Spiegel did.
Mr. Hill, would you put the clock back at 3 minutes?
Got 3:26 on mine.
It's going down to 3, Mr. Hill, pretty quickly.
Thank you.
You may proceed.
All right. The comment was made that Dr. Spiegel did a limited exam. I don't believe that's an accurate characterization. Dr. Spiegel talked with not everyone in Sterling, but Dr. Spiegel, the only one in this case, to my knowledge, to this date, interviewed Colleen Carmichael, interviewed Frank Carmichael, indicated Kathy Owens from Castle Rock, talked with Teresa Carter from Missouri, had one meeting where he talked with Mr. Ruffner, had at least 2 meetings with Joe Cloverdance from Michigan, who by chance had lined up an appointment to see Dr. Spiegel. And I don't know which one of us came first, the chicken or the egg, but Dr. Spiegel talked to all of those people. That Judge Daly talked about directed verdict. I think that there's a comment in the judge's decision. I couldn't explain all the distinctions between directed verdict and prima facie case and some of the phraseology we get there, but in Rule 41, the language is very clear. May move for dismissal on the ground that upon the facts and the law, plaintiff has shown no right to relief. And I say we have shown a right to relief through Dr. Spiegel's report, and I say that this, where the trial judge basically said there's no empirical data to support the best interest for Gregory being the removal of these guardians. There's no statistics. It's not persuasive. I did not find any one of the cases that I have mentioned where there was any statistical study, sociological study, and when one looks at it, our CRS 14 precedes CRS 15 on probate. We turn to neutral people to stop this kind of horrible power abuse and infighting. For example, in the domestic cases, to try to shift the burden from the court, we have the provisions now in there where matters, I think, by agreement can be arbitrated. We have the provisions in there for the appointment of a parenting coordinator, I believe, for the appointment of a decision maker. A neutral party here serves the purpose. Does a neutral party serve the purpose of taking away the terrible conflict? One would hope. But what the neutral party does is take away the animosity, the power, because the neutral party makes the decision, and there is a balance that is not there when the factions of the family are fighting.
Counsel, we have a one breath rule when the red light comes on, and I see you're prepared to draw a second breath.
And I can't.
Thank you, Counsel, for your argument. We thank both counsel for the briefs and argument. It is obviously a very important case to a very large family, and when we have the supplemental materials, we will meet and decide the case, and the written opinion will issue in due course, and we're ready for the second argument.